You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
Welcome, everybody, to the fantastic voyage. It's Here District. I'm the captain of this vessel, Captain Marcus Johnson, my first mate, Chris Johnson, the only father and son tandem in basketball history, college basketball history, to win a championship at the same school. I like to point that out because when you're part of history, you got to let people know about it. You got to remind people of that, man.
I appreciate that. History.
Yeah, I know you do, yes, bro. Sir. And look, man, we've got another great, great guest today for you, a guy that I was kind of joking off here. I've known for a long time. We haven't said a whole lot to each other. We're both Aquarians. He's February 10th. I'm February 8th. That explains a whole lot. But DA, David Aldridge. David, welcome to Here, yes, District, sir. Man. Thank you so much, man, for joining us. Yes.
My pleasure. Thank you all for having me. I appreciate it.
No, we appreciate you, bro. And so a couple of things, man. So, you know, when I'm doing my research and I'm looking up your bio, Wikipedia, and it's the craziest thing. So they've got, you're either born in 1964 or 1965. This is what it actually says in Wikipedia. Is it 65? I'm guessing.
65. It's been 65 for a while. Yeah, okay.
Check out Wikipedia. They've got 1964 or 19, like a question mark. Like you're the Shabazz Muhammad of the journalist world. Like you're trying to steal an extra season on us or something, you know. Like you're a holdback, you know, double holdback or something. But man, now I know you grew up in the D.C. area.
In D.C.,
you attended,
yes,
you know, when I think of Chris, you know, all time great coaches. Of course, we talk about Willie West Crenshaw High School, but this guy probably supersedes in terms of just public perception Morgan Wooten and what he did at DeMatha. But you went to DeMatha. Dave, just talk about growing up. Who are some of the basketball icons that you kind of idolized growing up? So you had to be around 78, either 12 or 13, depending on which date you believe you were born. 12 or 13 when the Bullets were really, really – really rolling like in the late 70s. But talk about kind of the basketball guys that you just love watching to play when you were coming up.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, when I was a kid, the Bullets, they were the gold standard in the NBA, right? Like they made four finals in 10 years, you know, so.
Wow.
So, you know, you watch, like my hero was Elvin Hayes when I was a kid. Like I practiced a turnaround jumper in my backyard all the time, you know.
Big E,
you know, that he was something, you know, he was the guy here back then. I was a big Bullets fan as a kid. John had just gotten to Georgetown, so they were just starting. And he had, you know, he went with a lot of local guys early on, like John Duren.
Sure.
And other guys like that, Craig Shelton. Those are the guys he was just starting to get. He hadn't gotten Patrick yet. Patrick was the guy that kind of took him to the next level recruiting wise. But he was doing it with local guys and was starting to win a little bit. But no, Lefty was the guy when I was a kid. Lefty had Maryland rolling. You know what I mean? Like they were that team. They should have. They got jobbed out of being in the tournament. They lost to NC State and won the national championship with David Thompson. David Thompson was my idol when I was a kid. Like I was like the Skywalker, man. Like everybody wanted to be like the Skywalker. You know, like so he was the guy because we were. In D.C., you know, we would get the ACC game of the week every week. So we would always see Carolina and NC State at the time. And Wake Forest was good at the time. And even Clemson. Clemson had Skip Wise from Baltimore, who was one of the great guards of all time in college basketball. And then Maryland was just rolling. Like they went from the Mac, you know, Tom McMillan, Lenny Elmore teams. Then they had Steve Shepard, who was on the Olympic team in 76. And, you know,
the bear.
So they were constantly in the mix. They were always good. You know, Ernie Graham was on the team when I was 13 or 14. They beat Notre Dame when Notre Dame was number one and had a big win. So Maryland was the big team locally here.
Yeah, well, D.C., hotbed, great talent out of that area. Now, quick Bear Shepard story. When I was at UCLA, my sophomore year, the year we won a championship, we went back and played in the Maryland Invitational. And that's when Lefty was promoting Maryland as UCLA of the East. That was a big deal back then.
That's right.
The UCLA of the East. And we went back there, and I was matched up against, I think, Steve Shepard. I think Mo Howard was on that team.
Yep,
but they were putting these little guys on me, Chris. They were putting these little dudes on me, man. And Bear was good, you know, but a good offensive player, not a great defensive player, but I had a great, great finals. We won the tournament. I think it was Luke. I think Luke might have been, John Lucas might have been on that team. Might have been a senior on that team. Just a great consummate floor general. But the excitement was palpable in terms of what Maryland was all about. It was a great game. It was a great game. It was heated and hot going back and forth. And so, DC has always been, I think, one of the underappreciated. You know, you think about Elgin Baylor and Dave Bing and all these, you know, just all-time all-timers. A great Elgin Baylor story. I don't know if you heard this, Dave. I'm sure you have. You may have written about it. But Wilt used to bring a team of guys from Philly down to D.C., and they would get to this small gym somewhere. Can you talk about that? Tell me about that story.
That's about 5 minutes from where I grew up. That was like the spot in D.C., one of the big spots in D.C., where the teams would come in the summertime and play. And so, Wilt would come down and teams from New York would come down. And Elgin, he was called the Rabbit. So everyone wanted to play the Rabbit, you know, like Elgin would come back to D.C. and play in the summertime. And it was great. I mean, that was before my time, but you heard the stories afterwards about how great it was. But you mentioned Dave Bing, Hall of Famer. You know, we had all kinds of incredible talent come through. Adrian Dantley's from here. Was ahead of me by a few years at DeMatha, but another legend, a local legend in D.C.
My arch nemesis, D.A., my arch nemesis at Notre Dame. I'm going to be transparent here because this is what we're all about. I was College Player of the Year in 1977. Yeah. And when people ask me, like, well, what was the most important factor in you being College Player of the Year? And I always say Adrian Dantley going pro and Richard Washington going pro. they left in 76. Yeah, and so that kind of opened things up for your boy here. But, man, AD was he was dropping 30s, you know, as a junior at Notre Dame. As a freshman, he came in balling. People don't understand, man, at 6'4", 6'4 and a half. I think he was listed at 6'5", but he's a short 6'5". Just how efficient and tough that Adrian Dantley, man, that guy was one of my all-time toughest guys to kind of go against at both ends of the floor, really. He wasn't known for his defense, but he was a competitor, man, and that was that D.C. Sure. What is the D.C. mindset? If you had to put a finger on what the D.C. mindset is in terms of basketball pedigree and attitude, what would you say?
I would say, you know, the words you mentioned, like efficiency, like, you know, we don't have the flash that they have like in New York and Philly, you know. Like, we can't claim Pearl. You know what I'm saying? Guys like that who had all the moves and everything. But our guys just got buckets, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, Dave Bing didn't have no flash. He just gave you 30 every night. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Austin Carr, another dude. Not a lot of flash to his game, but just gave you buckets. You know what I'm saying? And same thing with AD. AD was on the ground. He didn't jump. He didn't have any, you know, he's strong as hell. But, I mean, he just knew how to score. You know what I'm saying? So guys come out of D.C., most of the guys that came out, especially back in those days, just ruthlessly efficient basketball players. Like,
well, listen, man.
Be good.
I mean to cut you off. I got to jump in with this story. So Austin Carr. I'm a big UCLA guy growing up. Sidney Wicks was my all-time idol, three-time national champion, two-time player of the year. And he was just one of the most dominant forwards in the history of college basketball. Just, you know, look him up and Google him, especially his matchup against Jacksonville his junior year when he just turned out Artis Gilmore. But so they're playing it. So Chris, I go to the playground. I'm always Super Sid. I'm Sidney Wicks. David, I watched Sidney Wicks as a 10th grader at Hamilton High School tipping a jump ball from the free throw line, tipping it to the basket. When they used to have the jump balls at both ends of the floor. Yeah. And so I watched him as a 15-year-old 10th grader, city championship game against Jefferson. I'm all of 10, 11 years old. I'm watching this. I'm like, wow. So he was my guy. And so I'm watching Notre Dame, UCLA. Austin Carr gives them 47 points.
Dang.
So, of course, when I go to Angeles Mesa Presbyterian Church basketball blacktop, who am I? Sidney Wicks? No. Curtis Rowe? No. I'm Austin Carr. I'm out there by myself, and I shared this story with Austin Carr when he was working with the Cavaliers a couple of years ago. And so I'm out there on the blacktop day by myself. I'm Austin Carr. I can't miss. I'm playing. I'm just shooting. And I'm never a great shooter, but this day I'm just shooting as great as I've ever shot the basketball. this random kid comes walking by. So this is, what year was this? 71. So I'm probably 15 years old. This random kid, about 16, 17, not a great high school player, but just a random. He comes by and challenges me to a game of one-on-one. I'm in my Austin Carr mindset, David. So we're going one-on-one. I give him a jab left, Chris. I go by him to the middle. I bounce the ball off the blacktop. It banks in to the basket. It was like a shot that I don't know where it came from. That's craziest wild, shot I've ever made. And this kid just left. He just left shaking his head like, man, I don't believe this. But I shared that story with Austin Carr. But you talk about these D.C. ball players, and L.A. is similar in terms of the lack of flash and all that. It's just we give you buckets. And now I know D.C., the weather. Why do you think that? Is there a predecessor? Is there somebody that kind of – is it Elgin Baylor? Is there someone that kind of you can trace to where this mindset kind of comes from?
I think Elgin kind of set the tone, because Elgin was – and he was a late bloomer, right? Like he didn't – he was a good player and became a great player in high school. Used to be, it's now called Duke Ellington School of the Arts. Used to be called Western High School. That's where he became a real star player. But yeah, Elgin was real quiet. Dave was real quiet. You know what I'm saying? They didn't have a whole lot to say. They didn't trash talk. You know what I mean? So those guys really kind of set the tone. And what I loved about growing up in D.C., guys, is that whether it was the public high schools in D.C., the public high schools in Maryland, the private high schools in D.C., Maryland, Virginia, Catholic high schools, it didn't matter. You could go see somebody great play. It was spread out through the city. There was great talent everywhere. I grew up, when I was coming up, 3D was playing in Virginia. Dennis Scott was a couple years behind me. Grant Hill was a couple of years behind me, played at Reston. What I'm saying? Like, there were always great players everywhere in the city. Like, you could always go see somebody really good. When DeMatha, the 3 years I was at DeMatha, we played Dunbar, which had Anthony Jones, who wound up playing at Georgetown. And then we played Spingarn, which had Sherman Douglas on the team, and Earl Jones, who wound up Earl Jones wound up transferring, played at UDC, won the national championship, the D2 national championship at UDC. He played for Willie Jones, who was one of the great players that nobody outside of DC knows. Willie Jones, all-time leading scorer at my alma mater, American University in DC. He ain't trash talked. Willie talked all kinds of junk. Willie would give you buckets, you buckets.
And Earl Jones, his game? He was smooth. He was before his time, right? Wasn't he a big that could kind of thin, that could get out and shoot and handle a little bit? What would be considered a unicorn today? Back then, back then it was soft. Get your butt inside. You're big. Yes. You shoot too many jump shots.
Right.
People don't understand these guys that were before their times. Kind of had some issues.
I will say this about the ballers from the D.C. area in my era, which had like Allen Iverson. A guy like Mike Powell, Victor Page, David.
Victor Page could go now. Now he has some. He has some off the court stuff, but Victor Page could go.
But they had. Hey, Victor was my roommate in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, when I played in the CBA, and he was chill back then. But listen to this. Man. They had this crossover. They had this crossover that it was more than the Iverson crossover. It was a derivative of like Iverson's crossover. But when I was coming up in the mid 90s, them guys were known for that sick crossover in the DC area. David, to cap this point about DC, when they talk about the DC area, do you guys include like Baltimore, VA? Like, how does that work as far as what you associate with the hoop scene where you're from?
We keep Baltimore and DC got a little rivalry going. So we don't claim Baltimore. They don't claim us, and that's cool. Like I would never claim Dunbar. It's the best high school team I've ever seen, by the way. Dunbar, Baltimore, with Bob Way was the coach there.
Okay.
83.
So we, that was 83, Reggie, 84.
Was that?
Okay. So
they had Muggsy, Reggie, Wingate.
Muggsy Bogues, David Wingate, Reggie Lewis, Reggie Williams, and Timmy Dawson was their center. Was the guy that most people don't even remember. Was a hell of a player. Dude, that's the best high school team I've ever seen. DeMatha, when we went up there my senior year and played them, They killed us. And Muggsy, this was before the shot clock. So they were up by like 15, 16 with 4 minutes left. They gave the ball to Muggsy. He went four corners. He dribbled out the last 4 minutes of the game. Wow. He couldn't catch it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he just gave the ball. It was unbelievable. So I wouldn't play, but Baltimore's got its own thing. They should be proud of what they've. There's a lot of great players come out of Baltimore. And again, including Skip Wise, who was unbelievable player at Clemson.
What was his game about? I know he had the drug
smooth.
Issues and
he was
and the addiction
just
issues.
Just smooth
but...
guard. Okay. He's about 6'3", 6'4". But just smooth, man. He could get to his spot. He had a little bit of elevation to his game, but he was, again.
Okay.
He would just
handles
get to his
and
spot.
Jumpers and just,
his jumpers
yeah.
was
yeah.
wet and nice all the time. You know, like Skip Wise, yeah. and he had the handle was insanely good. You know, so yeah, he was a hell of a player. He got caught up in the scene and
sure.
never became what he should have been. Should have been in the NBA. He was a hell of a player. But yeah, when we say DMV, we're usually talking about D.C., Maryland, a part of Maryland, usually PG County is what we're talking about.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
where KD okay. grew up and all those guys played. We claim PG County because there's seven wards in D.C., seven geographic wards in D.C., and we usually call PG County Ward 8 because everybody winds up going to PG, playing school, playing ball over there, going to school over there. And then we'll claim Virginia every once in a while. We'll claim the good players.
right.
Like 3D and Green Hill. We'll claim them. We usually talk about Northern Virginia. Like we wouldn't claim AI's from down in Norfolk. That's not DMV. That's Virginia.
Okay. That's but Newport News, that area,
Newport
Michael
News,
Vick and all that.
Michael
okay.
Vick,
bad
Miles of Mourning, all them guys.
Yeah,
are
wow.
down there. They get great basketball down there. And Michael
right,
Vick, like
right.
you mentioned. And people don't realize this about AI. AI was a hell of a quarterback in high school.
Come on, babe.
They
Come
won
on
the
now.
State championship.
Come on
like,
now.
Nice.
Was, Bubba Chase.
He was nice.
No. Dave, the first game I saw him play, they played against – what's it, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And so he had about, 25, 13 assists, about 10 mm-hmm. turnovers. And they mm-hmm. asked Nolan Richardson about him. And you may remember this quote. And Nolan said, I'd have been in some calf ropings. I'd have been in some Cal Brandons. I said, but I ain't never seen nothing as wild as I just witnessed. I'd have been in some bulldozings. I'd have been in some calf ropings. But I ain't never seen nothing. This dude. Allen Iverson, man, when I first saw him, it was like basketball infatuation. I just fell in love. It's like, what is this that I'm watching? 6'1", 6'2", dunking, handles, jump, athletic. I mean, and then, like you talk about, I mean, just that motor, that intensity, all that good stuff, man. Yeah. We could go on this forever. Let me tell you a couple of quick DC-related stories, and then we're going to move on and talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. My first one, I got to talk about this because it's going to piss this guy off. But there was some Facebook back and forth. Michael Graham saying that he never got dunked on in high school ever in his career. Right. And then a whole bunch of DC guys came out of the woodwork and said that Milt Newton, our assistant general manager for the Milwaukee Bucks, got him at Sitwell Friends in a summer league. And everybody so I asked Milt about that. And Milt was like, yeah, I got him. Michael Graham swears to this day that he never got him. That's number one. And then number two, you mentioned DeMatha. There was a young man that was having a hard time breaking into the league for whatever reason, mid-80s. He came out, Chris, and worked out with me and my personal trainer. I was the first guy in the NBA to have a real full-time personal trainer in the offseason, Malik Abdul-Mansour, helped Kareem kind of refine his skyhook. So me and Malik are working out with this kid, David, all summer, individual stuff, Kiki Vandeweghe, David Greenwood, some other UCLA guys working out with him.
Right.
And he was busting, and so, but had a hard time getting in the league. And so my friend Malik reached out to Jerry West. Jerry West called me up, asked me what I thought. I was like, this kid can play. Jerry, this dude, he can contribute. Adrian Branch wound up playing with the Lakers that 86-87 season. AB, I don't know what he's doing now. Shout out to him, man. But
yeah, he's just, still doing. Just, he's doing college TV.
Is he?
Yeah.
Good for him?
Yeah,
good for him. So, but just good being a little part of his basketball journey, because right. He was really kind of confused about where what he was going to do, why he couldn't get in the league, and man, and I just saw something.
Adrian was like, another one. He was ahead of me. He was 2 years ahead of me at DeMatha. Adrian, when I first got to DeMatha, he was the guy on our squad, and he was the first dude I saw throw the ball off the backboard and dunk it in a game.
Oh, wow.
I've never seen that before.
Like, so you see that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So, no. AB was, and I went, his younger brother was my classmate at DeMatha. So, yeah, I know the Branch family very well.
There we go.
They just lost their moms a few weeks ago. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, it's been.
Condolences, but yeah.
Yeah, he was, Adrian was a great player, played great at Maryland.
Yeah.
I think Adrian would have been, in this era, he'd be terrific.
Right.
He's like Brandon Ingram. That's exactly who he is.
Okay.
He's Brandon Ingram.
Long, long range.
Long, lanky, can shoot it.
Yeah, lefty, could shoot it.
Exactly.
And just
he's
had
Brandon
a,
Ingram.
Just had,
that's exactly
yeah,
who
yeah,
he is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. 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 He was relentless trying to score the basketball. All right, let's move on, man, and talk about the team that we represent. Let me put it that way here.
Yeah.
Chris, can you do your Charles Barkley imitation for us? You don't feel comfortable doing that, man. Come on, man. He broke one out on me this morning, Dave.
That was accidental. That was
I'm like, what did Charles say about Giannis? He broke out this. Well, he said, you know, I can't do Charles, but
I can't Charles, do it either.
But what did he say? He said that Giannis.
Hasn't
what
improved. Basically, Giannis can't keep going down, you know, trying to go 105. Yeah, I think you might have saw it. He can't keep going 105. He has to improve as a basketball player. What are your thoughts on
well,
that type
yeah,
of
but first of all, I mean, I did you guys watch Popeye's Kids? I am what I am. You know, Giannis is, you know, and you're asking this guy in year, 10, 11, whatever it is.
Right.
And I love Charles. Don't get me wrong. Charles is one of the most respectful, you know, superstars out there for me. My personal opinion, with me, interacting with me. But you know, what's your thoughts, Dave, on Giannis and him having to get better? They're coming off a 30-12-6, 60% field goal. Yeah. Nobody's ever done it before in the history of the game.
Right.
I understand what Charles is saying. Your thoughts?
I don't know that you're going to get a guy who has been a two-time MVP and a finals MVP. You know what I'm saying? Like, why does he have to change?
So, why are you laughing, man? Why are you giggling? Why are you giggling like that, man? What do you find so funny, D.A.?
Why? It seems to me that the players around him should get a little better. You know what I mean?
Like, right, yeah.
He's showing you what he can do. You know, so.
Yes.
So I would say, like, look, I think y'all understand this because y'all are basketball people. I don't think most people understood, as great as Dame is, and he's a great offensive player, great. But the things that Giroux brought to the Bucks, you can't replace. It's not a coincidence that he went to the Celtics and the Celtics won the NBA championship.
Dave, don't you think it's a valid point too? And this is a point I always bring up that. The Celtics had the luxury of having Drew as a fourth or fifth option. In Milwaukee, with no Dame, no Chris being healthy, we needed Drew to be that second option, and he was just
not. That's not what he does. That's not what he does.
He just wasn't quite the same.
What I'm saying, on a healthy team, with a healthy Chris Middleton.
Oh, no, you're right. We saw it. We saw it play out.
You saw what happened.
You saw what happened.
So a guy like that just does so many things to facilitate winning basketball that you can't replace that, right? It's just impossible to replace if you don't have it anymore. So I would say I don't think it's on Giannis to get better. I mean, would it help if he shot 35% on threes? Yeah, it'd help some. But that's not – the Bucks aren't going to win or lose an NBA championship based on Giannis' three-point shooting. That's just not – it's not that important. It would be somewhat helpful, but to me, it's much more about the other people around him and what they're doing. And I'm going to take Dame at his word, because I think when Dame is at his absolute best, he's lethal offensively. And I don't think he was at his best last year for a bunch of different reasons. I think he, from everything I've heard, is killing himself this year to be ready. And I think you're going to get a completely different Dame this year. And that will make them a much more difficult team to guard. I like what they did in the offseason. They didn't have a lot of money. You know, they didn't have a lot of wiggle room because of the contracts. You know, they're at the second apron already. But adding Trent, adding Torian Prince, and especially DeLon Wright, who I love. DeLon Wright is – he is so underrated. And he's – you know, even if I think he's a little older than he was a couple of years ago in terms of, you know, his physical abilities, he's still so smart. He's still so effective defensively. He is – I call him the KOD, King of Deflections. He will deflect so many balls out of bounds and just jack up the other team's offense. You'll love it. You're going to love watching him play. He's smart. Knows how to play. I thought they had a really solid offseason considering they didn't have a lot of resources to work with. They added three really solid pro players to kind of lengthen out their rotation a little bit and maybe take some of that burden off of Giannis and Dame and Middleton to score all the time. You know, now they got a little bit more coming off the bench than they did in the last couple of years.
Well, quick DeLon Wright story. So I'm sitting courtside of the Drew League Championship. I think it was two years ago. Courtside, gym is packed, intensity, trash talking. It's DeLon Wright and it's Anthony Melton Jr., whose grandfather, nickname was Beatty, but he was or DeAnthony. DeAnthony is a kid's name, but his grandfather was Anthony Melton. Okay. And so that was his grandfather. But he was one of the greatest rat ball, gym rat players in the history of LA. A little 5'9 guard and Coach Chris and Little League Baseball at Barrington Park. You remember Beatty. Anyway, so they're playing on the same team. So, D.A., this other team of just kind of local guys, one guy named Headlights because he's got these big eyes, they were giving them all they could handle. Halftime, I think Melton and DeLon, they were down by about 6 or 7 points. Everybody's talking trash to me because I'm like pulling for the guys I know. And so I pull those two guys over to me. I said, man, come here. I said, y'all are NBA players. I said, these dudes here, these are good Drew League guys, but they don't have – I said, you guys need to kick it in the NBA gear. They're like, yeah, oh, yeah, we got you old school. We got you OG. We got you. And they went out and won the game comfortably and just started dominating in the second half. But my point is that you talk about DeLon Wright. Man, he's got the coldest. What do you call that Eurostep, Chris? That hesitation. He goes full speed. Then he puts the brakes on and
deceleration.
I mean, the deceleration thing going. Mm-hmm. And he's 6'5". He's athletic. Gary Trent Jr. I don't know how much you talked about him, but I've always been a major fan of him. He's given us fits when he was in Toronto. We were up like 30 with about 5 minutes left. And Coach Bud took the starters out. He got hot. He had to put the starters back in. We had to win it in overtime, but it was because of Gary Trent Jr. So I think they've done an outstanding job, John Horst, Milton Newton and crew, of bringing in those pieces on the margins that's going to really help this team. But the bottom line is getting back to Charles Barkley, how we started this conversation off. It's about health. It's about staying healthy. Dame, staying healthy. Yes. Giannis, been hurt the last two playoffs. Nobody that baffles me, Dave, how people don't even mention the fact that he's been pretty much a no-show in the playoffs the last couple of years. They just act like he's been completely healthy and his team has faltered with the healthy Giannis. Right. That makes no sense, man.
No, it doesn't. And you know this, Marcus. People have very short memories and they forget context. They just look in the box score and think they've solved it. And you're like, but that's not why they lost. you know, did you notice Giannis's name is not in the box score? Like when they're in the first series? You notice he didn't play. It's
a lot of letters in the alphabet missing out of that box score. Right? Yeah.
So there's a reason maybe that they didn't win that series. So No, absolutely. And so plus forget. You know, Doc came in halfway through the season. You know what I'm saying? Like, so now he gets a full season, gets to put his full camp, have a full camp with his guys, put his full system in, and make demands of people from jump that are different than when you come in and you're trying to get along with everybody. You're not trying to rock the boat or anything. But now it's his team. It's his camp. He can do what he wants in terms of challenging whatever he thinks they need to do. So I agree with you, Marcus. It's about – the playoffs are all about health. It's not about anything else. The healthiest team almost always wins. Not the best team, the healthiest team. And I think the Bucks are right there. Like, you know, Look, is Boston the team to beat? Sure. But I wouldn't say they're the prohibitive favorites, right, in the East.
Sure, yeah.
They're the best team, but KP's not going to play half the season. So that makes a difference. That makes a difference going forward, you know. So we'll see where they are.
We were very competitive with the Celtics last year.
I don't know what
the series wound up, but we had some really – had a blowout game, and they were up big on us. I think the first game in Boston, but we closed it to a one-possession game late, you know. Yeah. And that's with Dame not having a Dame type year, but still, DA, I had our producer Monas look up Dame's numbers, comparing him to other guys his age. I think what Chris, he was like four or five guys at that age that put up 24.7 assists like he did in a subpar year. And and he's working out with this guy, David Goggins, the SEAL, Marine SEAL. Dame's got a lot to make up for last year. Let me just put it that way. Not a lot to prove, but a lot to make up for.
You know this, Marcus. Great players have incredible pride. They never want anybody to think they're slipping. And so Dame will make it his mission to show that he's still Dame. And so that's why I think the Bucks, they're in the mix. They're there. Like they're going to have a shot at it.
Yeah, he may have one good year left in it. I mean, I'm not saying that's true, but it's going to be this year. This is going to be a really, really seriously, I think, spectacular bounce back year for him. Okay, let's before we talk about the book, I want to touch on a couple of guys with some Wisconsin connections. Get your thoughts on them in terms of their career trajectory. Where do you see it headed? Start with Johnny Davis. I'm surprised he hasn't been better. I don't know. You tell me. What's going on with this guy?
I mean, he played better in the summer league this year, but the bad news is he played in the summer league this year. First round pick going into his third year in the NBA shouldn't still be playing in the summer.
Lottery. I mean, he was lottery, right? He was top something.
10th pick.
He's lottery. 10th pick. 10th pick. Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, but he did play better. So, it's something you can build on going forward.
Right.
We will see. I'm not sure, you know, Marcus, you know, guys, in the league, you got to be elite at something. It doesn't matter to me what it is. You got to be an elite shooter, elite rebounder, elite jumper.
Defender,
elite ball handler.
Facts.
I don't think Johnny's elite at anything. You know, like he's good at a lot of things, but is he elite at anything? I don't see elite. You know what I mean? So, but he can prove me wrong this year.
Yeah,
there will be opportunities galore on the Wizards. Everybody's going to get a shot this year.
So that's Johnny Davis. That's JD. We wish him nothing but the best out of lacrosse and all that good stuff. So that's the next guy. Played for his dad at UWM. Didn't play a lot. He got hurt and didn't have a great freshman year. One and done. Patrick Baldwin Jr. Talk about ballyhoo. I love that word. Ballyhoo. Ballyhoo.
Yes.
I mean, what is he? I haven't seen enough of him to form an opinion. What is his game? Who is he as a basketball player?
Well, I'm not trying to cop out on your answer, but I don't really know yet.
That's where I'm too.
It's hard to make a judgment. First of all, you know, the Wizards are a really bad team right now. You know, they're trying to be bad to get better players in the lottery. So it's really hard to kind of. You see a guy do something, you go, was that something that I just saw? Or is this BS, they're down 18 in the fourth quarter and nobody's playing any defense? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. So he was in the G League a lot. He put up good numbers. He had a good season in the G League. So I don't know, guys. I'm not sure. I'm not saying no. I'm not saying
no.
I'm
good.
Saying I don't know.
For me, Baldwin has a skill set and a size that, if developed, he can be a serviceable NBA player. But again, it's about development and getting the opportunity.
Is he a poor man's KD? Does he have those kinds of handle and length and shooting and all that?
No,
not
like
that.
Not like a poor man.
Yeah,
but not in the KD. KD's, you know, KD, he's not like
shifty,
that.
Yeah, shifty, no, Patrick's not a, you know, not a scorer like that. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Now, he played in 38 games for the Wizards last year. So, I mean, he played some, but they're so bad, it's hard to tell. It's just hard
That's a great point.
I don't know. Like, like, you just don't know. Like, you know, so it's not, I'm not writing him off. I'm saying I think this will be a big year for him. I think he will get an opportunity this year to make the team, be in the rotation, get regular minutes every night. And then you can tell after 35 games or so, you know, what he is.
And I don't know where you guys fall on this observation, and it's kind of cliche-ish and trite to say it, but he just seems like, especially if his dad was going to be coach at UWM, he could have used another year or two of just being able to dominate in college basketball and, you know, getting his there's a lot to be said for a youngster like that having a great year. He didn't have a year. He got hurt. And so now, you know, no year, now you bump him up a level, and now he's got to make that emotional adjustment of going against grown-ass men and playing in the, you know. So I don't know. Sure. He just seems like a kid, especially if his dad, if he would have stayed at UWM, his dad would probably still be coaching there, you know, for another year or two. And it would have been one of those situations like Mike Davis's kid at Detroit Mercy. Go ahead and break the all-time scoring record for the school, you know. So anyway.
Sure.
But, yeah, we wish him nothing but the best. And the final guy, Rufus King High School, first 3 years, transferred to, I always have a tough time pronouncing this, the school in Indiana, La Lumiere. But Jordan Poole. I mean, Jordan Poole, man, what's going on with my boy? I still love this dude. The antics I'm not crazy about, even though it's entertaining, it's all Get Out.
Right.
But the skills, he's got tremendous scoring handle. All he averaged, what, 20 points a game at Golden State a couple of years ago.
I mean,
what's your take on him, where he is?
Yeah.
Kyle Kuzma, too much of a dominant ball guy for him to find shots? What's happening with him out there?
Well, again, this is where if you just look at box scores and records and stats, you'll say this is who Jordan Poole is. If you don't watch them every day and you don't talk to anybody on the team, it's complicated, like they say on Facebook. It's complicated. It's a bad team, right? First and foremost, it's a bad team. Nobody can say with any certainty what it's like to go from a team that wins, that is a consistent NBA championship level squad with NBA championship level habits, like the Golden State Warriors have been. You're on that team. You contribute to an NBA championship. And then you get in a fight, you get punched in the face by your teammate, and the whole world sees it on TMZ.
Yeah.
Now, what does that do to a person? And then you get traded. They pick him over you. You know what I mean? And you don't just get traded. You get traded to one of the worst teams in the league. So I'm asking people to, you know, get out of your social media hot take habit and just think about being a 22, 23-year-old kid. And ask yourself what that would do to you.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying. Like, I have to give Jordan Poole the grace of being a human being and being disappointed that his career has taken this pivot that he didn't ask it to be taken, you know, and see what happens. Then you add to that, they bring him here and they play him and Tyus Jones together, which is the smallest backcourt in the NBA.
Okay.
And probably the worst defensive backcourt in the NBA. Look, I can't do anything with a basketball, so I'm not hating, but I know enough about basketball to know when guys can play, what guys can do and what guys can't do. They can't guard. Tyus and Jordan Poole, they ain't guarding people, all right? Tyus Jones is maybe the best guy in the league with the basketball. His assist turnover ratio last year was 7-1. Okay.
Led the league the last 5 years or more. He's crazy with that.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's great. And offensively, he's really good. But he's 6'1", maybe, you know, and he's just not a good defensive player. And Jordan's not a good defensive player. So you put him in the backcourt with a guy, and neither of them can guard, so you can't switch. It's, you know, what's the point of switching? You both are not good at it. Right? Neither one of you are good. So you add to that. Then he had a terrible start to last year. He was awful.
Yeah,
awful.
I remember. Yeah.
And they benched him.
I felt for him. I felt for him. You feel bad. You know, you know what he's going through emotionally and all that. And
They benched him. And then they brought him back and they put him on the ball, which is what I said they should have been doing the whole year anyway. Like, what's the point of having Jordan Poole on your squad if you're not going to give him the ball? Like, that seems kind of silly to me. Like, he's not coming off of pin downs. That's not his game. His game is give him the ball, let him cook. You know, like, so you're the one that's paying him $100, you know, you're the guy that's paying him $30 million a year. You bought that contract in here. So let him do what he does. And so the second half of the season, he played much better, I think. So I would say this. I think, and they should have traded Tyus Jones and gotten something for him. They didn't do it. And he wound up signing with Phoenix, and they wound up getting nothing for him, which is not good management practices in my view. But now I think Jordan's going to have the ball. It's his show. Whatever the Wizards are going to be this year, he's going to be directly involved in it. And again, it sounds like I'm defending Jordan, and maybe I am a little bit. But you ask these coaches, and coaches will tell you the truth, especially assistant coaches. They'll tell you the truth. And they all say the same thing, independent of one another. The guy's in early and he stays late. He works on his game. He's trying to be better. Like, he's not mailing it in saying, I made my money, F all of you guys, I'll see you tonight.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to be better. So I'm not going to quit on him yet. I think a lot of people quit on him last year. I think there's something there. Now, it may wind up not being, in fact, it probably will wind up not being in Washington. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he has a good year this year, then they can trade him next summer to a better team and he'll play better and be in a better frame of mind. So that's where I think he is right now. I think he should now be poised to have a good season this year to kind of get his trade value back up. If he wants to get out of here, that's the way to get out of here. Play good, and then they can trade you for something.
Yeah, well, we wish him nothing but the best. We're pulling for him in the barbershops all throughout Milwaukee. Everybody wants to see him.
Jordan's not a bad guy. He's not a bad guy.
Yeah,
he's not a bad guy. You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
He wants to be good. He wants to be a good teammate. This has just been a rough last couple of years.
Well, and people don't understand that the flip side of greatness, when you have that taste of a 20-point season and the success you have at Golden State, and now to get, you know, I'm having flashbacks of going from the Bucks to the Clippers. Then you go to an organization that is major steps below of what you're accustomed to, and you go through your struggles, and these guys, there's a flip side. They're obsessive with being great, but there's also this sensitivity with these guys when things aren't going well. And I know that from personal experience. That gets magnified in your mind. You think everybody's looking at you, and that puts more pressure on you to perform, and it just becomes a conundrum of trying to get out of it and get back to where you were. But let's talk about, as we let you go after this topic here, but I had to get to this because this was actually my favorite topic. They wanted me to cover the other things before we talked about this. But Basketball 100, the book that you – and John Hollinger, one of the great analytics guys, came up with that player efficiency rating and executive with the Memphis Grizzlies. You guys came up with the top 100 players, I would assume, of all times list.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How did that come about? What criteria was used?
Right.
Tell us about the book.
Well, this started 2.5 years ago, I think it was. When the NBA had its 75th anniversary, we decided at The Athletic we wanted to do a companion series and pick the top 75 players in NBA history. So our staff, our NBA staff, we kind of, you know, hash it out, had some arguments, you know, some good-natured arguments, some serious arguments about particular guys. We came up with a top 75. So we wrote a series ranking the top 75 players from 75 up to one. No surprise, Michael Jordan was number one. I don't think that's a big surprise. It was very successful. People liked it. It ran for 3 months, I think, and did very well. And so after that, folks were wondering if there's anything else we can do with this, right? Like we have this, all this information, we have all these things, all these stories about people. And, you know, as people tend to do, they started thinking about, well, how can we expand it? And what would the natural expansion from 75 would be to 100? And, can, you know, and is it a book? The Athletic wrote a similar book about baseball, the top 100 baseball players of all time. So they thought, okay, let's see if we can do a top 100 basketball players of all time. So we did. You know, John and I and our editor, Rob Peterson, were kind of tasked with the last 25, or I should say the next 25, I'll put it that way. And so we didn't take anybody out of the first 75 because I thought that would be disrespectful. You know, you can't say somebody's one of the top 75 players and then not say they're one of the top 100. You know what I mean? Like, that's disrespectful. So we kept everybody in. We just added 25 more guys. That took us, that's taken us the better part of a year and a half to do that and to kind of, and lots of people on the staff helped us write the profiles of these guys. And so it's just, it's our way to, and we wanted to, the other thing we wanted to make sure we did, in expanding it was get some ABA guys in there that we thought really deserved to be in there that weren't in the original 25. Like Dr. J was in the original 75.
Yeah.
You know, and
what are the ABA guys did you, the Mel Daniels
I can't say the Indiana guys made it. Doc was the one ABA guy that made the original, but Artis Gilmore, I'm pretty sure made it. But he's definitely in the 100, so I'm not telling any tales.
I thought he was
school,
in the top.
So.
I think
it was in the 70. I think it was in the 75.
I'm pretty sure
it was
top 70. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, we had a couple of ABA guys in there, but we have a couple more now that we wanted to make sure got in there and got their respect. I don't know if you know, it depends on what you think. Rick Barry was a ABA guy. I mean, he wasn't there very long. You know, Gervin was obviously they were both in the top 75. They're in the top 100. So, but there's a couple more ABA guys in there. And then, you know, we want to be fair to the current generation. Like, we don't want recency bias to kind of either way, for good or for bad, keep us from putting guys in who we think should be in now. So there's a couple of guys that are currently playing that we've put in that we think meet that criteria as well. So, you know, it's subjective. There's no formula. There's no, you know, like it would be silly of me to say that we used this stat or this number. No, it's, what do you think? Is he top 100 or not? Yes. Why? Yeah. No, why not? You know what I mean? And so that's, we had to kind of defend our choices, like doing a dissertation. You know what I mean? Like, you got to defend your dissertation. So we did, and it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of work, but we're real proud of what the book is going to be. We think I do not expect, nor do I want everybody to agree with me and agree with us on our top 100. You're going to have five other guys. Why didn't you put this guy in? And I'll go, you know what? Yeah. He could have been in. You know, like, he very easily could have been in. But you have to stop at 100. I can't keep going. Stop at 100. You know, like, so there's some guys that I pushed for that didn't get in to the top 100. Yeah. So that's the way it goes. Yeah.
So in that vein, so now I know you said it's subjective, but I like baseball. I looked at just some pure numbers of players, David, who have played 10 seasons, made 5 All-Star games, averaged 20.7 rebounds, and at least 3.5 assists a game. And it's a list of only 12 guys in the history of the league that have done that. And then you talk about Baylor, Chamberlain, Robertson, Kareem, Bird, Barkley, Malone, Weber, LeBron, Durant, Westbrook, Giannis, and me. Did I make your top 100, David?
You gotta buy the book, Marcus. Come on, man. Man. You gotta buy the book, bro.
I like that, well, D.A. Well, I like that, D.A.
He didn't say no. He didn't say,
like that,
he didn't say, he didn't say hell no. You tripping.
I like that, D.A. Yeah. Buy the book, bro.
Well, you know, I wanted to throw that stat out there.
Come on, Marcus. I'm trying to pay this mortgage off, man. Come on.
I wanted to throw that stat out there. Just food for thought. 13 guys, the history of the league. have our numbers. You see what I'm saying? No, man. Look, man, I'm just messing with you, man. But, man, we appreciate you so much covering this game that we love, man. And I could talk to you for forever, man. But thanks for stopping by, and see you around the way. You do tremendous work, man, and just keep up the great job. And look, the book co-written with John Hollinger, Basketball 100, David Aldridge, check it out, get it, order it on Kindle or whatever it is you need to do. But, man, I just can't wait for it to come out so I can look for my name.
Go to the end.
Go straight to the end. You go straight to the
98. What? No, man. It's all good, man. I appreciate you, man, coming on, man. Thank you so much, and continue the great work that you're doing.
My all right, pleasure, thank guys. You,
David Aldridge. Senior, what's your title again? Senior, writer.
Yes, sir.
Senior. Now, I meant to ask you, does that mean you get more money than the junior columnist? Yeah. Is that a money thing, man?
I need you to be my agent.
Yeah. You're making it a pretty penny, man. It is exactly what you do. David Aldridge, we thank you, man. Have a great day. Appreciate you stopping by here.
Thanks, fellas.
All right.
This has been a Bucks Plus audio production.